Good morning. So last time we talked a bit about references a bit more, most notably about references to const, which is a common pattern you'll see when we want to pass something to a function without copying it. But we don't actually want the function to be able to modify it like references would let us do otherwise. We talked about methods that exist in classes even when you don't define them. So this includes a default constructor, which is pretty straightforward. It includes something known as a copy constructor, which is what gets used when we create an object saying the created object should initially be equal to some other object. It includes destructors, which we learned were called every time an object goes away. So either when it goes out of scope, for example, we have a local variable and we exit the function the local variable's from, that's when the destructor gets called, or when we call delete on something, the destructor of the thing we're deleting gets called. And we also mentioned some operators that we can override, including one which is defined by default in our classes, which is the assignment operator. So the assignment operator is when you set an object equal to something, it actually calls this operator. The default implementation just copies all the values of each member variable. But we see operator overriding used for a lot of other things. So notably, cin and cout, right and left shift operators are not actually just there because for cin and cout, they're there for some other reason, but they're overridden. So when you use them on an O stream, which is the type of cout, or an I stream, which is the type of cin, that class, they mean something different. They call this function that does the actual import or output operation. And you can similarly override operators. Like if you want plus to work on strings, the C++ standard library string class does this. So you can use plus like you're used to in Java on C++ strings. And we could, for example, define operators if we wanted a class to look like a floating point number when we did math. And I gave the example of a rational class. We could have plus, times, divide, and so on all work on our rational class by defining these operators. And I finished up by mentioning that we can define these operators either as a method of the class, in which case the class object type is on the left-hand side of the operator, and the method takes the arguments that are the remainder. Or we can define it as a function outside the class. And the compiler is going to, when it sees an operator involving an object, well, it doesn't know how to do that already, so it's going to look for one of these functions or methods, whichever ones it finds which matches the types that you're using the operator on, it's going to turn that into a method or a function call. So we had, as a real example, when we do use cout like this, this actually gets turned into our compiler into something like this. You probably never write dot operator that, but that's what the compiler is going to turn it into because there exists a member operator O stream, which takes an int. There exists one which takes a const char star, which is the type of a string constant. So the compiler finds all those and makes those method calls. Some operators are going to be defined not as a method of a class, but as a function outside the class. And one example of this in the standard library is with the output operator for strings. And the reason for this is that you can use ostream, iostream, without including the string library. That's separate. So therefore, the string library itself includes the actual output operator for ostreams. So they define this function like this that handles outputting a string. And notably, you can do this for your own classes. So if you want a class you write to have the ability to be outputted with an O stream without calling a function like print list, you just want to go cout shift your list, you can define an operator like this, even though you can't change the source code to the OStream class itself to add a method to it. And that's the reason why this sort of syntax is allowed. So any questions on any of these? Sort of issues with operator overloading, how you define new operators. Okay. So in that case, we're going to finish up talking about sort of the C++ language level issues. We're going through a combined example. So in Florian's slides, there's a one big C++ file. I've split this up into smaller examples, but you can have a link to one big C++ file which shows all of this stuff with a common test class to illustrate basically how the built-in methods work, to review that. We have an example of what what a user-written output operator looks like. That might be a handy thing to do. Reminders about how like constructor initializer lists work and so on. So we have this simple class here where we have a static member variable, which I remember early on I mentioned was a thing we could do. We have two other member variables, ID and value. And ID is const, and that is in fact a legal thing to do. And that means it can't change. So we have to set it in the constructor. We have to set it not in the code of the constructor, but in the initialization list of the constructor. And I'll show that in a second, because we can't assign to it. That's not allowed, because it's constant. We also have a friend declaration. And this is a common thing you'll see when people define this output operator function. So this is like our friend class declaration in our lab. This is not saying there's a method operator dash operator shift. It's saying there's a function outside this class called operator shift, which should be allowed to access private member variables in this class and private member functions. So as if it's part of this class as far as what private things it can access. And this works the same way as a friend class lets you that class access private things of the other class. Yes?
Are friends always declared in public? Because I think in the lab it was declared in the private.
The question is, are friends always declared in public? I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter. Okay. Other questions? Yes?
Is the default private, so like the first three are private?
Yes. So the question is the default private? Yes. The first three are private. Probably it would be much better style to actually write private, though. But yes, the default is private. Other questions? Okay, so let's go through our implementation. So we have several interesting things here. So one is we have this assignment of an initial value for our static member variable. And notice that I do not write static here. If you try to do that, your compiler will tell you, sorry, you're not supposed to do that. So we just initialize this static member variable. Remember, our general rule is when we have the class name coupled with a method name or a member variable name, we have used double colons. And that applies for static variables, too. We have, next thing I'll point out is our constructor. So the second thing we had in our class was this const int ID. And because it's a const int, I have to initialize it this sort of way. I have to have it in this list of variables after the colon that I can put in my constructor to have an initial value for. I do not have the option of doing it other ways because it's const. For value, I could instead leave it unset by this list and sign it in the constructor later, but I can't do that for ID because it's constant. If I try to do that, it will the compiler will tell me you're trying to change a constant value, even if I'm setting it later on in the constructor. We also have an assignment operator, and if you read this assignment operator carefully, you may notice that, like the constructor, the copy constructor here, it says that we're copy constructing something, but unlike the copy constructor, it doesn't actually copy anything. It's just outputting, you called the assignment operator, and it returns the own object so you can chain the assignments, which is conventionally what you'll see on every assignment operator in C++, because we want, as I mentioned before, A equals B equals C to work. But both of these, so the constructor actually copies x.ie and x.value. The assignment operator doesn't actually copy anything. It just says we called it. It doesn't change the values. And that means that this test class that I wrote, when we do assignment, we aren't actually going to change any values. So the ID and the value and the class will stay the same, which might not be what you expected. And if you write your own assignment operators, you need to decide, what do I actually change? That's a decision the class writer gets to make in C++. It's not what assignment actually means. And hopefully you choose something that makes sense to the people who are trying to use your class. So not shown here is a normal constructor, but our normal constructor is going to look like this, but going to increment ID count and assign that to ID. So we'll have each object will have an ID 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's fairly straightforward to do. So our normal, So we'll have a normal constructor which is like this, but instead does ID count plus plus. And also we'll have a constructor which takes an int v, we'll copy that to the value and set the ID count the same way. The last thing I'd like to point out is our output operator. So the way we write our output operators, we take in an O stream to write to. We don't just always assume it's C out, because maybe we want to write out this object to a file or something like that. And we use that out to actually write something. In this case, we're writing test ID equals and the ID and the value, and we're writing an at sign and using at f. So we're getting a pointer to the argument f, our test object, and printing out that pointer. So this is going to mean that when we output a test object, we're going to see the values of its two member variables and its address, which is going to let us figure out what's going on as far as where our object's actually being copied or not. When are they different objects, even if they have, for some reason, the same ID and value. And you can see one reason that would happen here, which is that if we use the copy constructor to create an object, it's going to have the same ID and value as the thing it was copied from. We also always return out, so the chains of operators work, because we want to actually be able to do C out, test object, space, and so on. And in order for this part to work, we better have this first part here evaluate to C out. And that's what that's doing. And that's why we're returning a reference to an O stream from this. So any questions about anything on here? Yes.
Does the this and the equals operator always refer to the right-hand side?
So the question is, does the this and the equals operator always refer to the right-hand side? Yes. The way you should think about it is that if I do x equals y, this is going to be x dot operator equals y. And this rule holds generally for operators. So the left hand, so if the operator is a method of a class, the left hand side is always this, no matter what the operator is. The other way you can think of it is when we make operator calls, we always put the left-hand argument as the first thing in the call, and then the other arguments after it. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So let's look at what this trivial class does when we use it on a simple example. So here I have an object AA, I output it, and I return. And helpfully, each of the methods we define in the class always output when they're being called, so we can figure out what's going on. Even the ones I didn't show you output when they're being called. So in this case, we call our test, which is, this is from calling test. So this is calling the default constructor, which we defined to actually write out this message. So we created our object. The address of our object is 440 and some other digits. And that is, in fact, what A is. So we called the default constructor an A. Then we outputted A, and both of these outputs used that cout, that output operator we defined earlier. And then we return from main, and because we return from main, this called the destructor. This is in test tilde test on A. Yes? So the question is, does return zero always call the destructor? So anytime we leave a function where we have local variables or some other scope where we have local variables, like if you define local variables in a loop, anytime you leave the scope of the local variables, all the destructors are called. The only case where you have to worry about destructors not being called is when you knew something and don't delete it. Otherwise, the C++ compiler will arrange to call the destructors and will do so promptly, as soon as you can't use the variable anymore. So, other questions? And we have other constructors in our class. So here we use this syntax to call the test constructor that takes an int. And that constructor happened to, I didn't show you the code, but it happens to set the v value parameter. And we can see that gets set by the time we print out the value in the constructor. And otherwise, we have the same procedure. We print out the value, and when we return from main, it gets destructed. Destructor gets automatically called. And I used what the syntax I would recommend for when you want to use the non-default constructor for a local variable, which is these parentheses. You could also have done test b equals 1, but I do not recommend that. But that would also have been legal. Okay, any questions about this? So you might think that because we have this parentheses syntax that we can use this to default, call the default constructor. And you'd have good reason to think that, because I believe our lab code like might have done something like new list node parentheses, and that works. So it seems like we should be able to do like test A, and that should work. It's a very logical thing to think. It would really make sense if that worked. It would be nice and consistent. And if you try it, you will be disappointed and very, very confused. Now, if you haven't seen this problem before, I cannot imagine you would have guessed anything that's happening here. Now, this is the actual output of this program. So notice that since all our constructors for test print out that they're making a test, so we aren't actually creating any test objects, because we know there something would be printed out. So we aren't creating any test objects, yet A is still a thing. And when we print out A, we get a 1. So what's actually going on here? And if you get warnings from your compiler might tell you what's going on complex way. So one thing here is this single parentheses makes this declaration of what we think should be a variable A, because when we have arguments to a constructor, it is, it makes it a function. You may notice that the option to turn on and off this warning individually is called a vexing parse, which probably gives you an idea of how compiler writers think of this feature of the C++ language. And the compiler helpfully tells us, remove parentheses to declare a variable, which is indeed the fix in what we did earlier. So that solves the mystery of what is A. What we are doing is we are declaring a function, which for some reason, even though we've never had a reason to do it, never seen it before, we can do in the middle of another function. Apparently just declare a function anywhere we want. Now the second part is, why does it print out 1? You know, shouldn't it like print out like something about the function? And the second warning here tells us the address of function A will always evaluate to true. So apparently what's happening is we have this use of the output operator here, and the compiler looks for a method or function it can call with this with A, which is has the type pointer to function. And it finds that, oh, there's something I can call with a bool. And, oh, I know how to convert pointers to Boolean. They're false if they're null and true otherwise. And that's what it's doing. So it says, OK, I'm looking really hard for a way to call this operator. And I know how to convert the pointers to bool, so I'm going to do that since I don't see any better options. If there were something more specific, the compiler would do that instead, but there isn't. But it finds something and happily calls it for us. So it's a Boolean, and since we haven't asked for Booleans to be printed out with true or false, it gets printed out as 0 or 1, and that's why it gets printed out as 1. So that's what ends up happening. The short answer is don't do this, and don't ignore your compiler warnings. Yes? So you've declared a function A which returns a test, is what this indicates. We can see this is legal syntax. So for example, here, I can declare foo in the middle of main and then call it. And it works. Not an error. You probably should never ever do this. But it is legal. This is inherited all the way from C and still supported. But I can't imagine any reason you would want to do this. But it's a general example of this syntax where we just don't have any arguments to the function foo. So we're just saying test A is a function returning a test. So we could have instead tried to call A. So he could have tried to do some test X equals A, and that would try to call A, and if we tried to compile that, we would get an error saying, I tried to look for A in some other file you were giving me, but I didn't find it. But since we never actually called A, we didn't get that error. Because it compiled this, and yes, there was a reference to A, but it was never called, so it could produce the executable fine. There was no need to insert the function A in it, or look for the function A when it actually made the executable. Okay. So any questions about this situation? Yeah. So the question is, when I declare a function like this, like I shouldn't, is that only accessible in main? Yes. If you want that sort of effect, I would recommend just using a separate file. Okay, other questions? Yeah. How would you call the default constructor? Like this. We just don't use any parentheses, which is, in fact, what our compiler will note you can do. Yeah, and I think this is most confusing because with new, this rule, this issue doesn't happen. And people in this class commonly write new with empty parentheses, which is perfectly fine to do. I typically won't just because of this problem, because I want to remember not to do this, but like it's perfectly valid to do so and always will do, new will always do the right thing. It's not going to declare a function for you. Yes?
How would you get it to print out 0 instead of 1?
You wouldn't with this sort of thing. So a pointer, if it's null, will, and you convert it to a Boolean, will be 0. However, if you have a normal, so I guess this is even more confusing because normal pointers, when we print them out, we get the address. But pointers to functions are a whole different class of pointers. So the operator to output normal pointers can't actually be used for function pointers to functions. Without an explicit cast. And that's why this is happening there. So if you made a null pointer to a function, which we haven't discussed how to do and will not, in fact, at any point in this class require you to know that, then you could make it, it should output 0. Okay, so the other thing we could do with test is we mentioned new. So we could also use new to call our various constructors. So here we're calling our test int constructor with new. Here we're calling our test default constructor with new. And here I could have written new test parentheses, and that would have had the same effect. And you may notice, not coincidentally, that the addresses we get for things we create with new are very different than the addresses we get for things we create as local variables. This is not just luck of the draw, even though you may notice the addresses seem to change every time, which is deliberate on modern systems. But this is not just luck of the draw. There is, in fact, different parts of memory the compiler uses for things you allocate with new and for things you allocate as local variables. We'll learn about that much later in the semester. But you can see a hint of that effect here. And you can, therefore, look at an address and you can guess whether it was a local variable or something made with new. So something you may notice is missing here is that there's no destructor calls. Because after main returns, the thing that C points to and the thing that D points to, they still exist. The object's still around, so there was no reason to call the destructor. So if we instead deleted one of the objects, then that destructor would be called. We'd have to delete each one if we want each destructor to be called. And this is something you'll need to figure out a way of making sure happens, for example, on your list class. You should delete all your list nodes. Otherwise, you're going to waste memory. And that means, for example, if you made a list and made a whole bunch of lists, even if you like cleared all of them, if you were not deleting all your list nodes, you'd eventually run out of memory for your program. You had a program which like did this in a loop. And this is, in fact, a common problem with real software. If you see real software where your memory usage creeps up and up, like web browsers have done this in recent history, for example, this is usually the sort of issue is forgetting like delete D in this case. But in a much more complicated piece of code where like that needs to be in a different function and all that. Yes?
So do we have to delete like all the objects created with the new like in every method?
So the question is, do we have to delete all the objects created with the new in every method? Everything you create with new should be deleted at some point.
So what if you want to return that new object?
So if you want to return it, then obviously you can't delete it before you return it. But it should be deleted eventually. So the usual way I would recommend thinking about this is that you should always know who has a pointer to an object is responsible for eventually deleting it. So if you return a pointer from a function, your thought is whoever gets this pointer is responsible for deleting it eventually, usually. And like if a pointer is part of like a class, like your list class points to a list node head, it's responsible for deleting that eventually. And you should always know that something is going to eventually delete this at a time when no one else needs it. Yes? So how did you tell if you left something behind? So if your program exits, you won't notice because the operating system will clean up all your memory, no matter what, whether it's used or not, when your program exits. If you have like a loop which does something, you'll probably notice because you'll run out of memory if you're using more and more memory, or even though the loop isn't doing more and more stuff, which is how we notice totally. And there are tools out there. So one example is if you compile with -f sanitize equals address, it will tell you all the places you forgot to delete stuff when your program exits. And there are other tools like that out there for helping diagnose this, which typically people run when like they make a web browser and find out that after 3 days it uses 5 gigs of RAM for no reason. They want to run a tool like that because the web browser is like a million lines of code. They're not going to figure out where they're forgetting to delete stuff easily. Yeah. Question: would -wall cache this? Generally not. So for simple cases like this, it might. But like the interesting cases are like when you forget to delete a node in your list class. And that is very hard to figure out without looking at the code in ways which are pretty expensive. There are tools that try to do that, but it's not a thing that you'll typically run as part of a compilation process. Okay, other questions? Okay, so we had one other operator that we were using before, which was the assignment operator. And I mentioned that we defined an assignment operator that printed out that we called the assignment operator and then didn't do anything. So here we create two objects and we assign one to the other. And what that actually does is calls our assignment operator. And we can see that the operator is being called with the argument being B. So it's being called on A. You can see the argument is B because B has V equals 1. And also because the address is exactly the same, because it takes a reference, so we aren't making a copy of B. We're actually getting using the address of the same B that we have as a local variable. And because our assignment operator just outputs that you called the assignment operator and forgets to actually assign anything, the object we assign doesn't change. You know, as the writer of the assignment operator, we are responsible for making the assignment happen. And we didn't do that in this case. Okay, any questions on this? Yeah.
So if you have actually assigned the values of B into A, then you're overloading the operator equals method. So is it going to change the address of AA?
The question is, if we actually assign the values, would it change the address? And the answer is no. It just changed the values. We have no way of changing the address. You can't like set this equals something. That's not going to work. Yeah.
Can you explain why the destructor is automatically called here but wasn't automatically called in the past?
So here we these are just local variables. With the last one, they're allocated with new. So we're supposed to use delete. Both local variables, they're called automatically. They're, in fact, even automatically called in reverse order in which the constructors were called. That is not a coincidence. That's required. Yes?
So the default equals operator just moves the order?
So the question is, what does the default equals operator do? So the default equals operator, so we'll talk about what the default equals operator wants to do here. So the default equals operator here wants to be like operator equals, and some other object is going to want to do assign each member variable. So each of these two non-static member variables, it's going to want to assign. So it's going to want to do RID equals other.id and RValue equals other.value. Okay, so this is what the default equals operator would naturally do. So for this particular class, there's a bit of a problem, which is that ID is constant. So if we didn't define our own equals operator and try to do assignment, we get an error. Any other questions? Yeah.
Going back to the last slide, I thought we defined the constant ID in the constructor.
Yes. So we defined, the question is, didn't we define the constant ID in the constructor? Yes. But our assignment operator wants to assign each member variable, and ID is a member variable. So it's going to be set in the constructor, but the issue is we're not allowed to set it again in the assignment operator. And the natural thing to do would be to assign all the member variables.
Okay, so we would get an error by assigning it in the operator?
So our operator doesn't change ID. That's its solution. We just don't actually do assignment. But if this is what the compiler wants to generate here. So that is not readable, but so this is the compiler's default would look like this, and that would be erroneous. Pretty sure that's what happens. Generally, if you have a constant member, like even if the compiler like did something like not assign ID or assign ID even though it's not supposed to, you're going to want to define your own assignment operator in this case, because if you have a constant member variable, probably assignment doesn't mean this thing the compiler wants to do. So we also have a copy constructor. So I actually didn't show you any calls to that one constructor I showed you, which was the copy constructor, where we initialized the ID and value based on another object's ID and value. And this is an example of one way to call the copy constructor. And you notice that that's different than assignment. So this doesn't call operator equals because initialization is special. We also could have written this syntax. It does the same thing. And this calls the copy constructor and actually gives us, in this case, the only thing we implemented where we actually get objects with the same member variables, but they have different addresses. Any questions on this? Yeah.
What if we have a function that's whose name is AA?
So what if I have a function which name is AA, and I try to do this? I'm not actually sure. You shouldn't do that, like, is the first thing. But I think it's a local variable declaration. And you can't call a function in main if you do after the local variable declaration. But I'm not actually sure. Yeah.
Why is A's memory address lower than B's?
The question is, why is A's memory address lower than B's? Even though we saw it get higher for new, this is because allocating local variables works differently. This is part of what we will learn about when we learn about how that works. And in fact, works going to lower addresses. Okay, other questions? Okay, so another thing to show is using function calls. So here we have a function which takes a test. This is not a reference to a test. This is not a pointer to a test. It takes a test object and returns one. This is the syntax for creating a temporary test object, calling the constructor with a 10. So that just creates a test object and returns it. And it takes a parameter, which is a test object, but doesn't actually do anything. So we call bar with C, and we see that, yep, it's in fact passed. And the thing which is passed is at a different address than, or sorry, at the same address that we called bar. The thing that's created with the is, we get the copy constructor called. So when we call the function, we're going to call the copy constructor to create this parameter variable. So what we're effectively doing is we're doing test param star C. It's as if we had that sort of code in main. That's what's creating the param that we could access in bar. And so to do that, we're in fact calling here our copy constructor. So this call here, calls the copy constructor on C. So we create a new test object, which is going to be our parameter. And that's because we didn't ask for a reference to star C. We asked for a new object that's the local variable parameter. So our argument gets copied into that. Okay. Then we also create our local copy of test with parameter 10, which is the value we're returning. And you'd expect, just like we had to copy the value we're passing into the function, because it's a local variable to that function, that we have this temporary value in the function, and we're going to have to copy that into main to make E happen. That would be a logical thing to expect. And we use that copy constructor to do that again. But this is, in fact, the only call to our copy constructor here. And after we're done calling var, the object that gets automatically deleted when main returns is the one which we created with a 10. That seems really weird. So somehow we're creating test 10 in var, and that's what gets deleted in main. There's no copy that we can see being made, even though our copy constructor, which is the only way we know of copying a test object, would get called and would print out a message. And what's happening here is something called return value optimization. So the compiler is allowed to get rid of copy constructor calls in cases like this. And that's what's happening here. So the compiler is, instead of constructing a local test 10 and then copying it to the return value, it's constructing test 10 in the location of in E. It's somehow indicating to the function your return value goes into this local variable E, construct it there. And it's being constructed directly rather than being copied. The compiler could have also called the copy constructor. Both are legal things for the compiler to generate, but in this case, it generated the faster version. And in fact, I think our compiler will always do that. Okay. So any questions about this? So we're going to have some little extra C++ topics we'll talk about when we start talking about Lisp, which I'll probably give you a 4-minute preview of. So one thing is that there are containers in the C++ standard library. So if you like java.util because you don't like rewriting ArrayList all the time, and you know, those exist. There is something called templates, and these are the closest equivalent to Java's generics, but they work differently in some very important ways. And we'll also talk about the string class, which you probably want to use. I'm not going to talk very long because it's pretty similar to the one in Java. So before I go on to these sorts of topics, anything on sort of how the C++ language works that I should go over? Let's do this. Okay. So, assuming there's no questions, if not. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about sort of some of the C++ standard library, including probably the, you know, after cout and string, probably the most useful part, which is vector. So this is the closest equivalent C++ has to ArrayList, which I assume is what you used in 2110. So who used ArrayList in 2110? Who used Vector, the C++ Java class Vector in 2110? Good, we've finally gotten rid of that. Okay. So this is the closest equivalent to ArrayList. Some things are a bit different. So we have push back, that's not the name you're used to, but it's append. And you can use indexing instead of like.get. We can use indexing because we have operator overloading. This is another example of operator overriding, that the vector class has this indexing operator defined, so you can use that syntax rather than calling a .get method. There is also an equivalent method for that, but you don't have to use it, and typically you won't. Okay, so some notes of why aren't we just using normal arrays? So there are several things that we don't like about normal C++ arrays that you might want vector for. Most of these are the same as in Java, but not all of them. So you cannot resize arrays in C++. That's the same as in Java. You have to make a new array. You can't assign arrays with equal. That's basically the same as in Java. Arrays are references in Java, so you aren't really assigning. In C++, arrays do not track capacity. So in Java, you can do array.length. There's no such thing in C++. So this is why we'll prefer the vector class. And they don't have bounds checking. So vector kind of has bounds checking, but it's optional. Unlike an array list where it's not optional. OK, so that's my brief introduction to vector. We'll talk more about all the things vector can do next time.